Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. The future is virtual, or maybe not. Hi, friends. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom for today, January 28th. My name is Naomi, and I'm thrilled that you're with us today for our business article for this month. We've started off 2013 with a lot of very fun and interesting articles, and I've learned a lot so far this month. I hope all of you have as well. And there's a lot more to learn today and the next couple of days. So please open up your magazines to page 40. And while you're finding this article, let me introduce our panelists. Joanna, welcome.
Hello, it's good to be here.
You are here for real, aren't you, in this workplace?
I am really here. I am not virtually here.
Now, what is our topic today?
Our topic is sort of comparing real and virtual workplaces, meaning people who get together in an office and work together and people who telecommute, sort of. Maybe they work from home or somewhere else in the country or a different country.
Exactly. And so it seems like telecommuting is sort of the way of the future, or it seems that it has been recently. It's been in the news and people talk about different kinds of video conferencing and all kinds of ways to make this happen.
Well, because of advances in technology, it's becoming more possible. It's not always about calling long distance and just picking up the phone. Now there's video chatting, internet's so much faster, and it's easier and more realistic to collaborate with people who aren't with you physically.
That's absolutely true, and we've seen a lot of trends, you know, just over the last few years that have to do with that topic. But today's article takes a little bit of a different perspective on it. And also here with us to talk about it is Josh. Welcome.
Thank you, Naomi. It's great to be here.
Now, you usually are a bit more of a virtual presence here at Studio Classroom.
That's right. I live in Southern California and work from time to time with the Studio Classroom family. It's nice to be here in person as well.
Now, do you have any experience with real or virtual workplaces that you'd care to share?
I do. I have. I work at a marketing company, and we have several employees that work for us virtually. Most of them are contract employees, so they're not full-time, and they'll do work for us, say, as a 3D artist or as a video editor. And I think that's been a trend in virtual working, is that there are a lot of specialized skills that companies access maybe for a short time and don't have the need for some of those skills in-house, we would say, or full-time. And so they'll reach out to freelancers or contractors.
Okay, I think that's a great point, that it's much more common to have part-time help that's virtual. And of course, there are more and more freelancers, especially in, for instance, I think of web programming. Mm-hmm. Most companies wouldn't have a web programmer on their staff full-time.
That's right. It's very easy to just jump online, post a job. I think of a website called Elance that's very, very popular, where you can post a need of pretty much anything related to technology and get quotes back from freelancers who will tell you how long it would take to do that job and how much they would charge.
Okay, and then they could do that whole job virtually.
Exactly.
Okay, but having a full-time employee working from a virtual workplace is still a little less common than those freelancers or part-time people, but we are going to learn more about it today. So again, we're on page 40 of your Advanced magazine, and we'll begin by reading the first page together.
Balancing real and virtual workplaces. Companies strike a balance between office-bound and all virtual workplaces. As a teenager doing freelance web design, Chris Nagelli was a workplace free spirit. His office was wherever he could plug in a computer. That's precisely how his company, WildBit, would continue to function for 11 years as it evolved from consulting to now exclusively building software. "We were doing the virtual company thing," recalled Nagelli, now 32. Then, about a year ago, came a dramatic philosophical shift. He and his business partner and wife, Natalie Nagelli, wanted to be with their employees, not just communicate with them via the phone or computer. Bringing WildBit employees to a centralized work address had become a more practical option because the Nagellis had started hiring locally, adding to a staff of software designers largely scattered throughout the world.
So the title of our article today is Balancing Real and Virtual Workplaces. We're on page 40 of your magazine. I'm Naomi in the studio with Joanna and Josh today. And how do we begin with our deck today, Joanna?
We begin with companies strike a balance between office-bound and all virtual workplaces.
So to strike a balance, that's a fun idiom.
Striking a balance means just finding a balance between two things, not too much of one or the other.
Mm. Yeah, finding that perfect, we sometimes call it the sweet spot, not too much of one thing or the other, just exactly the right conditions. But finding that balance when it comes to the office being an actual real place or a virtual place could be pretty tricky.
That's right. And we call those people in the office bound. And bound, as you see in vocab focus, is about where you can't leave an unwanted place. I'm not sure the office is always an unwanted place, but in this case, yes, we are talking about people bound to their office, maybe chained to their desks, we've said in the past, where it's people who can't leave that physical space versus people working from home or a coffee shop or somewhere that's not the centralized headquarters.
Right. It's interesting that you mentioned that there is sort of a negative connotation, a negative feel to that term office bound. And I think a lot of people have that negative perception of offices in general.
Yes. I mean, we've made them kind of sterile, not very exciting places. You think of gray cubicles and kind of uncreative spots versus working in your pajamas or working, you know, at a coffee shop. I think that's the number one virtual office in America these days is Starbucks.
Yes.
You walk in at pretty much any suburban coffee shop in the afternoon, you will see most of the people there plugged in to their laptops and just working away at the desks.
Right. I think for a lot of people, the sort of freedom that comes with a virtual workplace is very appealing. Would you agree?
I think especially for people who are very self-motivated, are able to set their own hours, and that's a very attractive option if you don't like showing up at 8 in the morning. If perhaps you do your best work at 5 or 6 in the evening, maybe you'd rather wake up in the afternoon and stay up until, you know, the late hours of the night. Maybe that fits you better.
Right. Okay, well, in this article, we have a more specific example of how this worked out for one company in particular. So how do we begin?
We're meeting Chris Nagelli, who was a freelance web designer as a teen, and that's a picture of him there on page 40. And we're going to hear all about his company called WildBit. And we start out in his past, where he was a freelance web designer. And that's a word I used a little early in the lesson. And it's someone who works for themselves independently and offers up their services to companies on a part-time basis. And he did web design as a freelancer.
And as a teenager. So we can tell already that Chris is a very very ambitious person, probably. He probably works very hard, and he's probably very talented. Here, we call him something else.
We call him a free spirit. That's a person who does what they want and enjoys that. And they just, you know, they don't feel limited by the rules. They do whatever feels good. It can be a positive thing or a negative thing.
That's true. Are you a free spirit?
In some ways, yes.
Josh, are you a free spirit?
No, I think I'm more of a conformist, you know, follow the rules. I'd say, with the exception of, you know, living in Asia, my life's been fairly predictable.
Yes, I have moments where I think I'm a free spirit, but I think ultimately I'm not really. All right, but for Chris Nagelli, being a free spirit for him had everything to do with his work.
That's right. As a web designer, all you need is your computer. You don't need necessarily to be working alongside whether it's your clients or fellow web programmers. You can get your work done on your own, pass it off to your client or whoever you're partnering with. And his office, it says, was wherever he could plug in. And that's a good phrase. We sometimes use that as an idiom, but in this case, it's literally, hey, plug in the computer, and he is designing a website.
Right. So getting plugged in, you're right, can be anything to do with getting connected. But here, of course, literally, he needs to connect his computer, but that's all he needs. So it's just this kind of thing, people with their computers plugging in wherever they can, that sort of formed his whole company, didn't it?
Well, his company, WildBit, actually functioned that way for 11 years with just working virtually. And honestly, there's not really a problem with that. If you're making enough money to support yourself and grow a company and it works, then, you know, that's great.
Right. That word precisely, by the way, you could also substitute exactly. That's just how his company worked. And so it continued that way for a long time.
That's right. He started out as a consulting firm, and consulting is where you come alongside a business and help them do something better. And in his case, I'm sure it was related to the web. And his company has shifted. It's now exclusively building software. Exclusively means now that's the only thing they're doing. And I actually looked them up quickly on the web, and it looks like they're building software to help companies manage all the versions of their own software, which is interesting. Lots of companies around the world are building tools to help them do their work better, and then they improve on those tools, and we call those versions.
Okay.
So you want to make sure that everyone is up to date, say, on the latest editing software that we would use here at Studio Classroom if we had good editing software. But
right. We get it done. Anyway, so Chris Nigelli is now 32, and he uses a fun turn of phrase here to explain what their company was up to.
He says, "We were doing the virtual company thing." That's kind of a slang way of saying we were a virtual company. We were doing that thing.
Yes, so we could use that phrase. It's a little bit informal, but we might say, oh, I traveled through Europe. I was doing the backpacker thing. It's that idea that this is your sort of way of doing something. And for them, this was working quite well. Until when, Josh?
Well, about a year ago came a philosophical shift at his company. And when you have something that's done philosophically, it relates to your mindset and how you approach something. And this, in his case, it was he and his wife, who's also his business partner, Natalie, decided to shift philosophically from virtual into having employees there with them physically.
Yes, and we call it a dramatic shift, and I would agree, it's very dramatic. It's extreme going from virtual to real, quote-unquote real. Of course, even virtual workers are still real people. That's not what we mean. We just mean a physical office. So they wanted to not only communicate with their employees over the computer, through Skype, through cell phone messages and text messages. They thought, oh, wouldn't it be nice if we could see each other face-to-face?
I think that introduces a new dynamic to your company. If you're used to just telecommuting, you don't have a personal ongoing work relationship possibly with your coworkers, or at least not the same kind as if they're sitting at the desk next to you.
Definitely. And I think when, even if I'm, you know, not feeling well and I work at home for one day, I sometimes miss that interaction with my coworkers of just being able to ask a question or, you know, just go over and chat to someone a minute. And so I do think it does change the environment a lot. Now, exactly how did this start being a virtual workplace? Like what was the reasoning behind that?
Well, they had staff all over the world, we learn. And I think it's also a lot has to do with the type of work they do. You know, if you're in a job that's largely computer-based, where you're performing tasks that certainly could be a part of a team, but allow you to work individually and then contribute that, you know, I think that's very different than, say, manufacturing or teaching or lots of things that certainly need a physical environment, physical interaction with either coworkers or your clients or customers. So it definitely is unique to this sort of information age that we're mm-hmm. in, where so many people are working behind a computer for hours and hours on end. And that, I think, is what the WildBit staff were doing. But instead, they decided it would be a better option to have physical employees, which requires, as we see on line 9, a centralized work address.
A centralized work address.
Means in one place, all in the center, instead of scattered about the world.
Right. And so why had this become more realistic for them?
Well, in addition to their staff, you know, overseas, they had started hiring more and more people locally. And I'm gathering from this that they eventually had enough local employees that it made it realistic to have a meeting place for them to all work together. Why telecommute with someone who lives 15 minutes away from you?
Yeah, definitely. So how did they make this transition from being an all-virtual workplace to an office-bound workplace? Let's find out in our next reading.
Getting real. In September, the Nagellis and their first full-time U.S. employee, a customer support manager, moved into an office building in Philadelphia. Since April, the couple that long eschewed the concept of office has been locked in a national battle to win, of all things, a $25,000 office makeover. "We'd have everyone under the same roof if we could," Natalie Nagelli said. Among the reasons she and her husband cited, spontaneous brainstorming sessions on the couch in front of the whiteboard, or over their family lunches prepared by a chef the Nagellis bring in daily to feed their Philadelphia workforce of 6. Take that, all you virtual office dwellers who now spend your days alone behind a computer in your den, lunching on warmed-up leftovers from last night's dinner. For many, meetings are conversations with a face on a screen, complements of Skype or WebEx. Collaborating with colleagues likely involves instant messaging.
So when we tell someone to get real, Joanna, what do we mean?
It means look at reality. Stop being unrealistic. You know, get real.
Right. And so it can be a little bit harsh, actually, if you tell someone to get real.
Yes, not in this case. Now we're just talking about get a real office.
Exactly. So what is the process for WildBit to transition from being a virtual office into a physical office?
Well, we don't necessarily learn whether it was the chicken or the egg that came first, the employee or the desk to put them in, but they end up getting both. They hire their first full-time, which is the opposite of freelance or part-time, U.S. employee, and the role of that person is the customer support manager. So I imagine this is the person talking to their customers, learning what their needs were, and then once the company provided them the software, talking to them after that.
Right, sort of the help center for the people who are working with this company, making sure that everyone's satisfied and everything is reaching everyone the way it's supposed to and so on. So they moved into an office building in Philadelphia. Now, what has happened since then?
Well, we learned that since April, this couple that has for a long time avoided the concept of an office, they've actually been competing to get an office makeover. So that is like a 180-degree flip there.
Yes, there's a little twist in the plot right here in this paragraph.
That's right. We learn that a company is, I think we learn the name of the company a bit later, but they are providing a $25,000 makeover to the winner of this contest. It's a national battle to win this, and a battle means that you're competing for it. They're not really fighting, but just a competition among small businesses in the United States And the total prize is $25,000, which is a good amount to redo or give a makeover to a small office.
Sure. It sounds like a lot of money to me. But when it comes to furniture and so on, this can go really quickly. So it would have to be a small office, I think, to get a makeover for $25,000. But I like that they have this little phrase there between the commas, Joanna, of all things.
Of all things is sort of a statement of surprise, saying of whatever you would think of all things, surprise, it's this.
Yeah, so it's sort of pointing out that this is a bit unexpected or kind of unusual or like you said, surprising. And so for these virtual office types to decide that they would like an office makeover seems like a bit of a shift.
That's right. And they said, we'd like to have everyone under the same roof if we could. So that is definitely a philosophical shift.
Mm. Now, having everyone under the same roof, of course, just means having everyone in the same building. And this is according to Natalie, the business partner and wife of Chris, who we met in the first sentence. Now, among the reasons that they cited or that they sort of quoted or gave for this change in their minds?
Well, one of them is spontaneous brainstorming sessions on the couch in front of the whiteboard or over family lunches. And to make that a bit smaller, or to put it simply, they want to be able to think about new ideas with their coworkers right then and there, spontaneously, not schedule a meeting or a Skype date for, you know, tomorrow morning or whenever it works, just right then and there. That's easy if you all work under the same roof.
Definitely. Now, brainstorming is a very useful thing for companies to do, right?
Mm-hmm. And there's definitely a lot of scheduled brainstorming where you say we're going to gather together and try to solve a problem and everyone throw out whatever comes to mind. And you write them up, say in this case on a whiteboard or on a large piece of paper, and you gather up these ideas. And you try not to, you know, shoot them down as you go along, but let your idea spur an idea for me. And she comes up with two or three, and then we put them all on the board, and then maybe go back later and evaluate how successful or strong the concepts were.
Good. Now, I find when I'm brainstorming, it helps a lot to be really face-to-face with a few people and to be all sort of throwing ideas out together. In fact, if I try to sit down and just be creative, it almost never works. But even talking to one other person, I find the ideas just come more easily.
Well, also, you're hearing that other person's ideas, too, and that sets off, you know, chains of thoughts in your own mind. And so if you're both talking and bouncing ideas off each other, you're that much more productive.
Well, one of the arguments against virtual workspaces is that oftentimes interaction and successful collaboration isn't scheduled, right? That it happens just in the lunchroom, or it happens, you know, on the way out of the office, and they happen spontaneously, which is a word we use here at line 16. And you can't really have those spontaneous interactions if we're emailing each other all day.
Definitely. Whereas if you're having lunch together, family lunches, then you might have those moments that just pop up, we might say organically, just sort of on their own. They just grow. They just happen. Now, tell me a little more about these lunches.
Well, I know that if someone brought in a chef to feed me, I might be more, you know, imaginative. I might be more willing to brainstorm. But they have a chef that comes in to feed them all every day, and I'm a little bit jealous.
Yeah.
This is pretty common among tech companies in the States. It was started by a small company called Google that decided to feed all of their employees, which now total 30,000 in the U.S. alone. And they have an incredible chef that cooks free meals, breakfast, lunch, and dinner for all Google employees. So a lot of companies that aren't near as big as Google have adopted this kind of fringe benefit, we'd call it.
Right. It's appealing, I think, to employees when it comes to this idea of, do I really want to get up this early and go to this office and hang out with these people all day? Well, those chef-prepared lunches might help twist your arm. They might help convince you a little bit.
And they also keep you from going out to lunch, which keeps you at your desk a little bit longer.
That's a good point.
It helps with productivity.
Yeah, there's something in it for the employer, too. Okay, now moving on to the next paragraph, we have a little bit of a shift in the tone, speaking of shifts. There's a little bit of a different perspective coming along here.
Take that, all you virtual office dwellers. That's sort of an aggressive phrase.
Yes.
Take that. Like, oh, we just beat you, you know, ha-ha.
Yes.
Take that blow. We're winning.
Right. So it sounds like the real office is winning again suddenly. It's kind of surprising.
It is. You'd think the folks at home in their fuzzy slippers are having the best time working behind their computer. But now the people in the office are having more fun. So if you're spending your days behind a computer in your den, you're not eating chef-made meals. You're eating warmed-up leftovers.
Right. Unless you're a chef, then great. You can work wherever you want. As long as you have a kitchen. But yes, if you are, you know, a web designer who works from home, maybe you're eating pizza every day for lunch for a week.
That's very stereotypical, Naomi, to say that.
Oh, sorry. But yeah, it's not as appealing for sure. And so for many, we find out what?
We find out that meetings are conversations with a face on a screen, complements of Skype or WebEx. So these meetings aren't face-to-face like what we've been talking about. If you are a virtual office dweller, maybe you just have a Skype date, which is less glamorous, perhaps.
And sometimes a bit more annoying. I mean, I think these instant video messaging programs are just fantastic, but you still break up or you pixelate or your voice comes in a little shaky. It happens and it can be annoying.
Oh, and WebEx is the most annoying of all of them.
Really?
Right. Trying to put video into a PowerPoint or Keynote and then playing that via WebEx is just a recipe for disaster. So instead, you put it on YouTube and
right.
Everyone has to go to the YouTube link and it starts asynchronous. It's all very challenging.
Yes. And of course, another thing that's challenging is collaborating or working together with your colleagues.
When you work together with colleagues that aren't actually in the office with you, it likely involves instant messaging, which is real time and helpful, but there's always issues of, you know, be right back, I have to go to the bathroom, and then you got distracted and you show up 30 minutes later,
right.
A little bit rude. Stuff just happens and you're not face to face to work it out normally.
Exactly. So which one do you think is winning so far? Office workplaces or virtual workplaces? Think about it, let us know online, and come back tomorrow as we continue this fascinating article.